Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic community. My name is Matt, and joining me is the guy who's always up for one more of Mom's pancakes. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
What's crappening? Oh, my dog. What song with B? You're messing with the Pong Weeples. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 212, Earth Angel, is brought to you by Vaughn the Brawn Snack Bags. You don't get this big without sake Kit Kats.
Ooh, yum. Pete, here we are, the penultimate episode of Runaways Season 2 being discussed. Got one more episode, Pete. That's in 2 days' time, this Friday. Also, Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery starts tomorrow in these United States. Friday for the rest of the world on the Netflix. We'll be podcasting it this weekend. Also, Pete, Punisher in the Horizon. Busy times around the old geekosphere, but we love talking this stuff.
What do you say we get to the Runaways recap?
Take us to it, Pete.
Flashbacks show the struggle Susan fought to protect Leslie from Jonah and led to her reconditioning. Leslie sees a laughing infant in a white room and picks it up. The giggling baby begins to glow, as does Leslie before she wakes up. Alex works at his computer compiling files on Flores, AWOL, and his mother when Nico tells him there's a house meeting in 5 minutes. Over Chinese food, they note concern for Chase. It's not like they're Cylons from Alex's Doctor Who show. But Chase doesn't have to dodge a rat named Chase on the way to the kitchen anymore. And Alex doesn't think he'll be the last to leave. Gert defends Chase when it's questioned if he'll tell his parents or Pride where the hostel is. Carolina comes in with news that her mom's in trouble because Vaughn told her Frank sent her to the crater and they need to rescue her. As they discuss the merits of the mission, we see another vantage point watching them. The discussion centers on the possible turning of Leslie to their side, but either they all go or no one does, and Alex votes no. Pride interns Mary and Megan arrive at the Stein house because they've been summoned, possibly for promotions, only to be stalked and shot with tranquilizer darts by masked figures revealed to be Pride. Stacy reports the neurodisruptor's intensity was off and their targets were still cognizant. Robert raises concerns since the weapons were designed for their children, but Jeffrey says that's why they're testing them. Catherine says to mind wipe them and try it again. Chase comes down to the kitchen where his mom is cooking breakfast. It's a big adjustment for everyone, but he feels like he's abandoned his friends. But he's not going to tell where they are. Victor joins them, and that commotion Chase heard last night was definitely not Pride employees being repeatedly tranked. Since they're still smoothing things over with Atlas Academy after the theft of the computer, Victor thought Chase could learn about Pride's philanthropic work. The father-son bonding time doesn't see them toss the old pigskin, but Victor tells Chase he's losing time, blacking out, so the tumor must be back. And now he has a weird alien infection nobody ever saw on Jonah. Leslie is brought to a black jacket-wearing Frank. All he's ever wanted is family, not the church. But he's still a cardboard cutout to hide the fact Leslie had a child with another man. And she's pregnant again, you idiot. She'll take a paternity test, but she won't get back in that white room. Alex awaits Tamar, who rolls up without her seatbelt on. Buckle up, kids. He was expecting Livy, but wants the gun Darius had with Alex's fingerprints because he's done some research and thinks he knows what Darius did with it. He wants to use it to get justice for Darius's murder, so Tamar gives it to him. The price? He and Livy are done. But she's got to go pump before she ruins her top. Nico taps into the dark energy again and retrieves her staff. She tells Carolina she wants to go on the mission. Molly's in too. Prison break, girls trip, plus Vaughn. Woo! The same watcher from before looks through the eyes of a painting. Vaughn gets in the car with the girls on the road trip to save Leslie. He's got snack bags and gib garb aplenty and tells Nico she's got to ditch the makeup. Plus, at Vassar, his nickname was Vaughn the Brawn. At Pride HQ, Chase sees the good that they've done, even sending water filtration filters to Flint, Michigan. Chase asks what's behind the locked door. Like, what's his deal? It's easier to get into Harvard than Pride. Chase gets put on mail sorting duty and overhears Mary and Megan unable to recall what they did the night before. In the Pride secret antechamber, nobody's buying Leslie's cover story of a European tour. They debate mind-wiping Chase, but that Victor got his son back while they all failed to get their children back is why they're moving forward his way. Catherine bites her tongue. Carolina hasn't been to the crater since she was a kid. Definitely more Alcatraz now. But the Braunster stole Aura's map. Vaughn will lead Carolina to confront Frank. Leslie's paternity test was inconclusive as the samples were tainted and unresponsive. Carolina surprises Frank and tells him she doesn't view Jonah as her father. Frank tells her Leslie turned her back on the church. He tricks Carolina by getting her to think he's taking her to Leslie, but locks her in a wooden shed. Frank tells her that her powers can't help her because there's no wizard tech to use her light on. They're old school out there. Susan breaks in to see Carolina and tells her Leslie is close and how Jonah hijacked her late husband's peyote-fueled imagination and stole her daughter and never even told her she had a granddaughter. Vaughn updates Nico and Molly, but Nico is hesitant to use the staff, but they're going to wait. Susan leads Carolina to Leslie and apologizes about earlier. Susan tells them they can't run away because of Frank, but need to reclaim the church. Gert finds Alex cleaning the gun he got from Tamar. She admonishes him about what he said earlier about Chase being the first to go. Gert's stomach growls fiercely as Old Lace is hungry. The Yorkses feed her and Gert burps savagely, proof that Old Lace is alive and well. Susan gets Carolina and Leslie to the gate with release papers signed by Frank, and they're almost out when Frank triggers an alarm. Nico and Molly snap into action, and the Braunster faints. Carolina uses her powers to end the standoff peacefully as they are dazzled by her radiance. The church followers open the gates, but Susan wants to stay because her faith has finally been validated. Leslie needs her, but Susan feels she is needed to purify Frank's corruption. They throw Frank in the wooden shed he had Carolina locked away in. Leslie is brought to the hostel and Alex objects, but she reveals her pregnancy. The girls support her presence. Gert wants in on the next super secret sisterhood road trip. Nico confesses her fear to Carolina, who suggests that maybe the darkness is her power, the way the light is Carolina's. Chase finds a mind wipe serum vial in the recyclables before the intern invites him to an event, but he turns it down. Victor asks him what he's found by snooping other than Mary and Megan's functional alcoholism. Victor brings him to the secret antechamber to show him his future. They tell him that he can use Pride's resources to make up for all the bad they've done. He can save the world and his friends. As an artist sprays a mural of Carolina levitating, she gets a visit from Gert, who shapeshifts into Zavin. She tells her she's been watching, trying to find a way to make her understand she's her betrothed.
Pete, let's talk villains and probably the baddest dude out there now, at least in this episode, for much of it, it's Frank. Wee dumb Frank is now a villain, Pete.
Dumb, sympathetic, nay, likable. But Matt, the fictional world has perhaps taken a real turn in that this was a man who in October was accused in a different production of harassment. Let's hope that that's not true, but his fictional presence has certainly taken a turn for the worse. It's almost like they knew, Matt. They put him, though at the crater everyone wears white, he wore a black jacket. Yeah. I guess the mustache would have been too much.
This also an episode where some women band together, say that they've had enough of his nonsense, and help get many other people to have a completely different opinion of him, art, life, etc. As you say, hopefully there's nothing to the allegation. But Pete, remember the last time somebody made a high-profile, specific allegation like this, and it wasn't true? Because I don't quite remember when that was.
I mean, I can remember one being made against George Takei that's not been recanted, but didn't go anywhere. I mean, listen, here's how you solve any of this. Be good to people is what it boils down to. And, you know, it's difficult. Apparently the scene was a love scene. And, you know, as you've suggested off mic, the idea, the very real possibility that they're going to have like coaches or, you know, monitors in scenes like that. If it's going to mean not losing your career, I think everybody involved would be in favor of that because it's not intimacy, yet it's intimate.
Yeah, there's definitely discussion in Hollywood of having a kind of third party monitor on set for intimate scenes. Kind of akin to the way there's a monitor in scenes involving animals, where it's not somebody who's at the behest of the director, the studio, the production. It's that kind of independent third party, just somebody to help make sure lines aren't crossed and make sure everybody understands what the particulars are, particularly in a scene where in the particular project where actor Kit Pardue is accused. You know, it was a scene involving, you know, adult intimacy, which is one thing when you say, you know, action and needs to stop when you say cut, and not things that you do before filming the scene or after people have yelled cut, etc. But back to this episode, Pete, it was with that kind of general knowledge of those real world allegations that as the female characters that we can support in this episode lead a bit of a rebellion against the black clad Frank, and he gets put in the old particle board shed/hole. It was a little extra knowledge that, hey, I don't mind this happening to Frank,
right? And again, you know, you'd like to see the guy clear to this, but so often these accusations have come out and we've learned from other places that, you know, it's never just one. Shifting gears, Matt, let's talk about one of those women that band together to help other women, and Susan.
It's a very heartwarming moment to see her kind of recapturing that Susan identity, if you will, being interested to not only be mother to Leslie and be, enter into a grandmotherly role as well, but also to just be clear for herself, to be clear on her motives, to be clear on what's right and what is wrong, and to take that action. We need more of that in this world, particularly women, but people in general saying, I'm going to stand up for what I believe in and I'm going to do what's right. It's never too late to speak up about wrong going on, and we see it here with Susan.
But I think we see her go too far. She doesn't leave with her daughter and her granddaughter and her great grandchild on the way, because she's gonna stay there and purify the church from Frank's misdeeds. Yes, you did see your granddaughter levitate, but you stayed behind and your granddaughter left. I think this is a case of power corrupting absolutely, and I have to wonder that if in a season three, Susan is going to be a big bad behind the Church of Gabor.
I think that in universe, that is a very able conclusion. Let me give you a thought outside of the reality of the story, if you will. Pete, let's enter now the Runaways writer's room. You've just given your pitch for some general thoughts that need to be covered in this episode. Pete, here's my question to you. What do we do with Susan? Is she like joining the team now? No? Can you figure out a way to like make her do something kind of like triumphant, but also headed off screen?
I can find a way to incorporate her, you know, pushing the church's agenda as Leslie deals with this, baby on the way. I think there's definitely a way to incorporate that. I don't think the church is leaving this show. It's not like they're going to be written out, as I understand it, with the comic. They're as integral to the story as Pride is, perhaps more, given that the alien beings they worship are as central to the storyline as they currently are.
Well, Pete, next on the list, there's a little question mark here. Is Chase a villain? Has he gone full bad guy? You know, he's not willing to sell his friends, at least in terms of the location of the hostel, but there he is, Pete. He's eating pancakes. Your thoughts?
Eating pancakes. He's in the inner sanctum with Pride. He's the first one they've brought back, now recruited. Yeah, you're gonna save the world. We'll get everybody else back. Then we'll all step aside. You know, Janet says some of us just want to be moms and dads again. Nobody buys it. You just wonder what kind of damage they're gonna do to Chase, to his relationships. There's no way the rest of the Runaways, particularly Alex, who he already has a testy relationship, are going to be down with this move.
Lastly, Pete, Zavin kind of firmly sets herself in the story here to be a disruptive force to the status quo. Is she here to do bad? Is she truly the betrothed of Carolina?
Well, that's definitely from the comics. I'm going to save full discussion there for when we talk theories next. But what that means in terms of, Carolina's relationship with Nico, Carolina's, time on Earth, she's finally embraced being half human and half alien, and here comes Zavin to unsettle that sureness that she's only just developed.
Well, Pete, making sure that we are always settled, we are always sure of where we're headed, it's of course the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. We may have aliens suddenly appearing out of nowhere telling us that our fate is with them, but you know what, Pete? Whatever that future might be, we have the back catalog, we have the present stuff that we're podcasting. It's all there because of those patrons.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content, all sorts of goodies there. And then you get to pick the level that you want. You could be ultra, ultra, ultra.
Well, Pete, from the ultra, ultra, ultra-ness, let's talk some theories here. Some deep dive observations. And this isn't exactly a full theory, but Mary and Megan, the funniest thing on Marvel TV since Since what? Because that was hilarious, as kind of also awful as it was. I think it was mostly being played for comedy.
It was, you know, you'd like to see a little bit more of them. We met them when they first went to Pride HQ back in the season 2 premiere, 11 episodes ago, Matt. It seems like only 2 weeks ago. But yeah, they bring a little lightness, but at the same time, they've been repeatedly drugged and experimented on. So let's remember, Pride is, at its core, an evil operation. Yeah, they've sent some water filtration kits to Flint, Michigan, and storm-ravaged Puerto Rico. Bravo. They've also killed people.
Sticking with the evils of Pride, Pete, is Pride being wasteful by having an intern sort garbage from recycling when they could merely have separate garbage and recycling bins?
Not where I thought you were going to go. Or just throwing mind wipe serums into it. Like, yeah, I think they've really got some issues as evil organizations go.
It's maybe indicative of a slightly lazy bit of effort into how do you get Chase into the office and whatnot. I understand he's there as like the boss's kid, so let's give him something like, you know, puppy sorting or something that's kind of, you know, minimal. But it kind of was like, again, if they want to have it both ways, then throw in a quick Megan and Mary line saying, hey, we gave him the easiest work ever, hopefully the bosses notice. So a minor little finger wag there.
What about Zavin as the betrothed here? She also uses Destiny interchangeably, so I don't know if we can necessarily, with Earther sentiments, Matthew, view betrothed as intended to marry. They could just have to be space friends or something like that. But it brings up an interesting aspect, and the character in the comics can shapeshift, gender included. But we know, obviously, Carolina prefers the company of women. Here, Zavin appears as a woman. She has previously been an older woman. Is this truly her gender, if gender exists even among aliens? And two, what kind of wrench does it throw into the Nico Carolina romance?
Well, I think most immediately it is meant to just simply be, you know, a romantic triangle now. That sort of classical wrench. It just happens to be between three women. And you know, I applaud the show for, I think, taking that old trope of, oh no, now there's another, and all three are going to be caught up in this crazy triangle of craziness, you know, kind of taking that old model and applying it to a gender formation that we tend not to see. As for the larger issue, you know, oh no, are these aliens going to be a metaphor for gender fluidity, and what does that say about things and stuff? I suspect that the show is probably going to, by and large, sidestep that. I don't think that we're going to get kind of like a very special episode where we explore issues confronting the trans community by way of Zavin. I think it'll just kind of be like, hey, she's gender fluid because aliens, and this is a very diverse and open show, which it is, but I don't think that we're going to necessarily dig deep beyond like, hey, she's a magic alien who can change gender and age, because for them it doesn't mean anything.
Victor is molting the same way Jonah did. And yes, there's a little story wiggle room. He was in the healing algorithm. He didn't see how far Jonah had kind of slid, although later he did, when Jonah brought Robert to Pride headquarters. So is this Victor? Is this not Victor speaking to Chase, telling him the tumor is back?
Well, Pete, that is the question, or at least one of the questions regarding Victor. I guess it is, I mean, there's evidence to support his illness. There's evidence to support that Earth Victor is losing time. He thinks it's, or he's implying, or he has inferred rather, that it's a result of his physical state. I think we are meant to clearly read between the lines and say, oh, it's him losing time to the alien force living inside him. I'll just say, I mean, so there's a lot of question marks I think the show has yet to resolve, clearly. I'll kind of throw into the mix there, do I think that the alien force would take over his body and have it deteriorate so quickly? No. But then the flip side is we've seen that with Jonah. Now, we don't know how often Jonah was doing the recharge thing prior to, you know, this umpteen years that Pride was taking runaways away. So I guess something else for them to think about resolving in the season finale.
What is up with the gun that Darius got Alex's fingerprints on? What was it used for? And how is Alex going to use it for good?
Well, first of all, Pete, I'd like to point out that the gun from Darius is now said to have his prints on it, not DNA, the way the late Darius had claimed. And that's something that we spoke about in those early episodes. Like, again, and I really don't want to be too harsh against this as a writing room, but Pete, it's 2019. We've all seen CSI a bajillion times. You got to know the difference between fingerprints and DNA if you're going to throw one out and not the other. And then now if you're going to change course, fine, at least change course. Here's what somebody on the writing staff, some writing assistant should be like, oh, wait, we said it was DNA last time. Here's the simple solution. In this episode, you have Alex say, I don't know, it's got my fingerprints or DNA or whatever, but I know it's bad. And then you go, oh, okay, whatever. He's like 16. He's not clear. We're not clear. We're all on the same page and that we're not clear. What was it used for? I mean, Pete, the only major death from the past is the death of Amy. And I don't think we are meant to, you know, that was meant to be read as a suicide and self-inflicted, even if Jonah had a role in it. So I don't think that the gun is going to be, oh, this is the gun what Darius used Amy because he was hired by Pride to... That kind of breaks down, so I don't know.
What about the paternity test that Leslie took and it was deemed tainted and unresponsive? We questioned the paternity of the baby when we learned last episode. What's up with this and the tainted love between Leslie and Frank?
Well, Pete, I think first let's acknowledge the real life then pregnancy, now third child born to actress Annie Wershing.
Congratulations!
Indeed, her third son born this past November.
Fun fact: all three of her children have been named Jack Bauer.
Well, I hope that all of them were born exactly on time. Dee-doo, dee-doo. Anyhow, so. I mean, could that be, not even could that be, hello, let's use logic, is that the real life genesis to the state that the character is in? Yeah. Now that said, back to the in-universe story here, I guess that would explain why maybe it was a little sudden, because maybe, I don't know to what degree, maybe she was not sharing that with everybody, or they were like, oh, time to make a change in the script here. But in terms of this being our theories segment, looking ahead to next season, there's one of two options, which fair is fair. I'm cribbing from you off mic. One is the character can continue to be pregnant and she'll have to wear a little bit of a tummy suit there. Or maybe there's advancement in time so that the wee babe has appeared and the post-pregnant body of the actress can be on screen as well. So either way, Pete, it's a lovely problem to have.
Can I suggest my far out there pitch for season three?
Go for it, Pete. The unconfirmed season three, I should add.
Absolutely. As of yet, unrenewed, as we are recording here in early January. But what if, Matt, we know that Chase makes it to the future and grows a crappy beard? and sends a message back to his father. What if, I'm just saying, what if they flash forward that far?
Maybe for an episode or two. I can't imagine all of season three requires every runaway kid, of which the oldest in real life is maybe like 22, 23. These are legitimately, you know, younger people. It's not, you know, 90210 and 35-year-olds being like, welcome to freshman year.
Listen, when the new rebooted 90210 comes out, okay, and Gabrielle is really 72 years old playing a 40-something year old or a 50-something year old, you know, I look forward to that. And Steve had better be the star of several Sharknado movies.
To get all these actors into the makeup chair for, you know, aging stuff, and then the parents for aging stuff and wigs and all that, I think it would be a fun tangent to go on. But I wouldn't imagine we do it more than two episodes next season.
What about when Frank told Carolina, oh, your light's not going to work here at the crater. No wizard tech. We're old school. I seem to recall an entire white room that used this thing called electricity. I seem to also recall other tech things going on there. Is Frank just a dirty, dirty liar, or did the script forget they also had electricity?
I think the script forgot. I would also like to add to it, fine, so that nonetheless the story is saying you can't zip, zap, zoop your way out of this, you know, woodshed. Okay, fine. Message received, even if it seems to be contradictory how that message has been shared. Can't she, like, fly really fast against the door or something like that? Like, if a mere layperson was trapped in one of those and you really wanted to get out, you know, you'd, like, kick the door or stick your shoulder into it.
Yeah,
or, you know.
She has blasted people with her light, and now a wooden shed is an obstacle. It felt like, oh, we can't have her leave this situation because her grandmother has to find her. Oh, her powers have been rendered neutralized. And then I think, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think it's further complicated by, yes, everybody there sees her use her powers, and it's breathtaking to them because they have been raised in this belief system and they're finally seeing it manifest. But Nico is blown away like she's never seen Carolina do this before, like in the episode where AWOL came in and she levitated herself and Alex, or like when they went down to the bottom of the hole. Like, it just, that felt gratuitous and incongruous with everything else.
And these are both problems, in my opinion, that A, are problems coming from the story as presented, and B, problems that could be fixed even after the episode was shot. All you need to do is have Kit Pardue dialogue. You know, he could be off screen, or could be, you know, cut to Carolina close up and have his voice say, you know, and don't try anything funny. We have an energy dampening field. Okay. Like, that's a better answer than like, hey, remember that room where there was electricity? There was no electricity. Same thing here with your Nico scene. If when you edit the episode, you go, oh wait, Nico's really impressed, but Nico's seen this a zillion times before. Okay. Get the actress back. Have her record dialogue, so when you know, have her be astonished, cut to a wide shot and have Nico's voice say, you know, they're all so impressed with her beautiful light, or something like that, where it's like, oh, she's amazed at other people's reactions, not seeing this herself. You know, these are little solutions, and fine, maybe, you know, with the Kit Pardue one, depending on when the edit comes in and when the allegations are made, blah, 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 but there's little solutions here where it's literally one line and we, the audience, go, okay, got it. No powers in the shed because story said so, versus like, hey, there's no electricity anywhere, including the gate that unlocks with electricity when they're told Frank has okayed them leaving, and then he stops it. Wait, Pete, isn't that scene even at night? So what's lighting? Oh, it's electric lights.
Yeah.
Oops. You know, like, there's little solutions here.
Definitely.
Always bringing us solutions, thoughts, smarts. Pete, it's Fred from the Netherlands. Are you ready for your slice-o, Fred?
Always.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Runaway Season 2, Episode 12. I have some problems with the kids' their sense for democracy, especially Alex's. Carolina comes in and says,
"My mom's in trouble. Fawn just called us at Frank Center to the crater. It's a Gibb compound in the desert where they do religious trials and discipline."
The gang has to decide what to do, and Nico says,
I'm not going to decide for everyone. Either we all go or none of us do.
To which Alex responds,
"Great. None of us do."
So how democratic was that? As a leader, Nico decided all or nobody. And then Alex says, "Great." What was the influence on this decision by the others? And then much later in the episode, when Leslie comes in to the hostel, to the underground mansion, I don't know why they call it a hostel, Alex says,
"Well, it is good to know we're not even pretending it's a democracy anymore."
Whereas at that moment, Carolina, Nico, Gert, and Molly think that Leslie should stay. Okay, another topic. I think it's very nice that Chase is now in the camp of the parents, in the Pride camp, and Leslie is in the underground mansion with the kids. It's indeed, as Molly said before at the table, I like one for one. This is a very nice construction and could lead to interesting storylines. Wonder what episode 13 will bring. Well, Chase is really into the Pride group. I wonder if he is believing his father. On the other hand, I have the idea Victor is more or less honest when he is talking with Chase there in their backyard. And talking about a backyard, whoa, I would like to have that backyard. I really wonder if Chase is going along with Pride and using the technology, etc. If we see the message he sends from the future back to his father, he indeed uses technology. But is this technology he develops himself because he's smart as his father? Or is that indeed on top of what Pride offers him now in this episode? Another small nitpick was, of course, that in the underground mansion, it is Chase that picks up this telephone. It could have been one of the other kids as well. So that's a bit too coincidental. And what about Leslie's pregnancy? If we see the results from the prenatal test, we see that there is a pregnancy, but that the paternity testing was inconclusive. Samples were tainted and unresponsive to testing. Well, I think Jonah is the dad then. I thought, by the way, Leslie becoming bigger due to her pregnancy happened very quickly. I never saw anything before until, as it proved to be, her mother suddenly said something. So that's a kind of a nitpick. And what the heck is this Xavin, this shapeshifter or something like that? I don't know if she occurs in the comics. I don't know the comics, but okay, we will have to see. This was all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, thoughtful views there from Fred, as always. Regarding the hostel, I think maybe lost in translation is that the hostel, H-O-S-T-E-L, that is that's what their base is being called. That comes from the medieval Latin hospitale, so a place to stay, different from hostel, H-O-S-T-I-L-E, coming from the Latin hostis, meaning enemy.
Yes, but we're also explaining this to Fred in Europe there, where hostels are frequently hotels that people, you know, check into. It's not a hotel. It's certainly more run down, more of like a backpacker type thing. I think the biggest influence for Hostel is, again, as Fred says, he's not a reader of these comics. That's what they label the mansion. I think it's kind of tongue in cheek too, like, oh, here's our underground mansion. Oh, it's a hostel. You know, it's also a play on words. We've had the pun Hostel Takeover was an earlier episode title.
Pete, Fred also calls into question the nature of the Runaways' democracy. To me, it looked familiar. It's a Beatles democracy. Either everybody votes yes or it's a no. That's how we run Fantastic Geek, by the way.
It is.
Is a Beatles democracy a democracy?
Yeah, it brought up an interesting point. And then that it gets overridden and Alex is kind of shamed as a jerk for having overridden the mission, and they saved Leslie and she is with child. And this may be a special child on top of it. He's you know, tread a fine line here, being really kind of narcissistic in the way that he's approached this season.
Lastly, Pete, is Jonah the baby daddy? That seemed to be Fred's pondering there. I know we've talked about it a bit, but let's get you on the record officially. Is Jonah the baby daddy?
I mean, the scene at the beginning of the episode certainly leads you to believe that Jonah is the father. I can't believe we've gone so many episodes here, Matt. It's been 4 full episodes in, you know, actuality since Jonah's been on the screen, and that in a flashback. Yeah, we got a voiceover 2 episodes ago at the very end, but interesting that he's been this absent for this long. Gotta expect that to change in the season 2 finale.
I continue to be gobsmacked that we have not seen Jonah in all these many episodes. It completely goes against my theory of have him in as many episodes as possible since he's a part of the cast, but I guess story wins out.
I want to congratulate Fred on 12 straight episodes in 13 days hanging with Fantastic Geek. We're going to take a slight break in recording episode 13, the season 2 finale, for a couple days, but you guys will get that in mid-January when we drop it. But way to go, Fred. Earned a much-deserved break.
Yes, we've been recording these ahead, and Fred's been hanging with us, so it's been nice having him in the Fantastic Geek flying machine here as our co-pilot, navigator, etc.
If you want to hang with us, Matt, are there any ways people might do that?
Well, Pete, let's start with you and Twitter. How can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R-J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,290 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, as mentioned, we will be back in 2 days' time on Friday to talk the Runaways season 2 finale. Lots of other geeky goodness along the way on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, but the focus now, all Runaways, as we see how this season wraps up. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
For my light will shine through another and cast out the darkness covering the earth and lead you to your destiny, where you will walk as children of the light and shine as brightly as the sky above.